Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Support for GigPod is brought to you by Swiss Movement, quality watches at affordable prices. Check out their website at www.swissmovement.co and get 10% off all watches with the code GigPod88.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of GigPod. We're back after a brief break after the International Games, episode 66 of GigPod. And I'm Rizzo and I'm joined this week by my old pal Bruce Hillboy. Bruce, how you doing?
I'm very well, mate. Thanks for having me on. It's good to be back chatting Celtic again with you.
I know, it's like the good old days are back again. So, normally we'd talk about matters on the pitch first, but I thought we'd have to talk about the big news off the pitch, which is that on Friday, Celtic announced late on Friday evening that after only a couple of months at the club, Dominic Mackay, the chief executive, had stood down for personal reasons. I'll just have a quick read of his statement. He said, "I'd like to thank the board and everyone at Celtic for their support and wish everyone at Celtic every success for the future." And that was it. Ian Bankier said, "We thank Dom for his efforts on behalf of the club and everyone wishes Dom and his family very well for the future." And Michael Nicholson, who has been with Celtic since 2013 and was the Director of Legal and Football Affairs, is now the acting CEO. So, Bruce, what did you make of the news on Friday night? Did it come as a surprise to you?
Aye, I think it did. It came as a huge surprise that the CEO, who's been ushered in after such a long reign from law, basically, we've been fed that he's going to revolutionise the club. And he kept using the phrase world class when he was talking about his vision for the club. And then I know there's been a lot of debate, bit of humour over his start date, but it's only been about ten weeks since the 1st of July and they've already moved on. So it did come as a big shock. And to be honest, none of it really makes any sense to me. I don't know about you.
No, it doesn't really. Well, I suppose it is the Celtic board and things are always a bit odd with the Celtic board. But no, I mean, as you say, he'd not been there for long. He'd come up with all these ideas. I mean, he talked quite well, but maybe a lot of that was just football business jargon speech. And it's really hard to know what to make his time at the club because he wasn't there long enough to make an impression. I mean, he talked about how he'd picked Ange to be his manager. Like, that was his choice. But then Ange yesterday said, quote, "We have to be careful with the narrative of who brought me to the club. I was surprised as anyone that Dom resigned, but I am going to be respectful of him and his family. When people say personal reasons, there's reasons for that. Michael is now in charge and that's good because I already know him," end quote. So that just sort of adds even more mystery to me. I mean, I don't know if Dom will ever say anything about why I left. I'd have my doubts. I mean, I think there'll probably be an agreement with him and Celtic in place to stop him saying, maybe the real reason why I left, if he'd fell out with somebody. And I think it probably makes sense just to say it's personal reasons. But no, I genuinely didn't expect him to leave that early after all his talk at the press conferences about how he was going to revolutionise aspects of the club. And it was a surprise, and it will be interesting to see how the guy that's the temporary chief executive, Michael Nicholson, if he gets a job permanently.
Yeah, I think in an ideal Celtic world, for the board that are there, I think they'll be hoping that they can quietly usher Michael Nicholson in full time, whether if he wants the full time gig or not. I think if he wants it, they'll be keen just to kind of quietly hoping that we keep winning on the park, and then they can, a good day, very bad news or whatever, they can bring him in, say, "Oh, look at the success he's brought if we say we win the Betfred Cup or something." So, but it just it makes no sense. And I know Ange was talking about the narrative. Well, as much as, I don't think Ange has missed yet when he's answered a question about Celtic and the kind of goings on at board level, but you need to remember that that's the narrative that we were fed. And when Ange Dunne's, when he got announced as the manager, it was Don McKay that was on the website with Jerry McCulloch talking about why Ange was picked to be the Celtic manager, which was before July 1st, by the way, for anybody keeping count. And then when Ange came to isolate in London, Dom was there waiting on the private jet at the airport. And then when Ange got to Celtic Park, it was Dom McKay that was next to him then. And then I think you were at the fan media thing. It was McKay and Postecoglou. I know Ian Bankier done the media one, but it was McKay and Postecoglou. So, yeah, we're glad that it's hopefully, like, we don't know behind the scenes, hopefully Ange just decides to get on with it, because there is the makings of a good thing there. But you need to forgive the fans and by that thing in the media for believing that Ange was Don McKay's man.
You're right, as you say. I mean, there was a period at the press conference when Ange first came to Britain. Ange and Don went to the Scotland-England game at the Euros, so you're right, they two like were a team. Now Ange is saying that might not have been the case, so I'm not really sure. I mean, I suppose in a way it's a relief that it happened now and it didn't happen before the last game, before the split against, I mean, before the break against Rangers, because that would have just caused chaos. I mean, like the night before a derby, if there was a news we'd left, I mean, Celtic have done that in the past before. I mean, I think Brian Dempsey left the day before a cup final against Rangers. So no, it's certainly very interesting off the park as usual with Celtic, but I don't know, we'll just need to wait and see. I mean, I think it's best just to leave it there about Don McKay, because I think more will come out eventually, and if stuff does come out, we'll cover it in the podcast. But Bruce, on to matters on the park, and on Saturday we defeated Ross County 3-0. It was a not bad performance in sort of difficult circumstances when you consider the squad that we had to pick. Jota and Cameron Carter-Vickers made their debuts, and it might not have been like a 6-0 thrashing, but it was a decent enough result in win. Do you not agree with it?
Oh, definitely. I think it's, in many ways it was as good as it was going to get yesterday. I think what was evident is how much an impact Kyogo's already had on the team, and they missed him. We missed him an awful lot yesterday. And we're not going to win every game 6-0, and we're not going to be 3 or 4-0 up at half time in every game. So you're always going to get those games that, you know, those chances don't go in. And yesterday they didn't go in. You know, I know the St Mirren game, I think the keeper let a few in. So, you know, you're not always going to get that. And yesterday seemed to be that. But it was a good win. And a Yeti, I mean, you know, I seen last night only touched the ball 15 times, but he's put two in the net with those 15 touches, so that was good to see him. Didn't think his overall game was great, but in the penalty box he came alive and he scored two goals. And I thought Jota was quite bright, with end product was maybe lacking a wee bit, but that's just your standard winger, I think, and he plays the game with the head up and he seemed to keep going. And I said, Ange after the game said they didn't really want him to play 90 minutes, but because of the injuries, they had to keep him out there. So he could probably be quite pleased. And Carter Vickers, you know, I know he'll get the credit for the goal that took a wild deflection, but he looked quite assured at the back. But he did look, I don't know if you agree, but I thought he looked as if he hadn't played a competitive game in quite a while. But the longer the game went on, he did look as if he was kind of feeling it, and he got announced. There was a great moment when he got announced man of the match, and then about 20 seconds later he got nutmegged. So but I thought he was fine, and I thought Starfelt, I know Starfelt, he persists to give the ball away in really stupid positions, but I thought he looked a wee bit more assured next to somebody that's actually got a couple of years worth of professional football experience. So, but it was a good one, and Joe Hart made another great save as well, so he's added to his fan club already. And as I say, after what happened 2 weeks ago, if you would, you know, you were going to say, right, you're going to win the next home game after an international break, losing your best player injury for a month, you'll win it 3-0, I think everybody would have settled for that.
Aye, I would agree. I mean, I especially agree about Kyogo. You can see that he's going to be a big miss already, and I really hope he's back earlier than the 3 to 4 weeks that Ange said on Friday, but I would doubt that. Again, I agree about Ajeti. Didn't have the best game, but he scored two goals. I mean, I thought he did well, especially for his second. That was actually a great Bob or Turnbull for that goal. and McCarthy, who I'm glad is back, headed on in the bar, and he'd done well, like, to be in there, the right place, right time. It was a penalty box striker goal, and in fact, his first goal was like that as well. It was a great cross by Abada, and he was there, right place, right time. And I actually thought, Carver, because played well, as you said, and as you said, he just, I think, was feeling it a bit at the end where he got nutmegged. I thought that Jota did well, especially in the first half. I actually thought Abada played well, but he really should have scored at least two. I mean, that first one where he hit the bar, I think he should have really scored, and that one where he was close range at the side, and he put it into the side net where it looked easier to score. He was unlucky with that other one that hit the bar, but I think it was as good as we were going to get. As you say, it was after the international break, our best players missing through injury. The team's still, like, bedding in. And, I mean, I know everybody was down after the game before the split against Rangers, and that has to be the case because that's just the way it goes. But, no, I mean, as you said, it was a good way to bounce back, and I didn't think it was going to be easy. I mean, I was a bit concerned when it got to, like, 50, 60 minutes, and we hadn't made the breakthrough, and Ross Gray had a couple of half chances. But, no, I mean, if you take your chances, it's something's going to net, and Carter Vickers done well, and he does look to be a good player. I mean, I feel a bit sorry for Stephen Welsh that he was left out, but I don't know if Carter Vickers will play in midweek against Betis. I might be too early for him, but he looks to be a player that could be a defensive mainstay during the season. I know it's early days, but he really does have enough about him to show that he could be involved maybe a lot more than people think.
Yeah, he's fit. He looked very assured. He's quite physically imposing as well. I would never like to run into him. And as you say, he looks, you know, he looked like, I'm going to say, cruised through the 90 minutes because Ross County had a few openings and a few counters. But I thought he was fine. But I think we really do need to look at stability at the back. It's another, I know Juranovic has come in now, Ralston missed yesterday, and then Taylor went down injured. But I think, as much as we hear about this intensity that Ange likes to play with and it leads to rotation and stuff, I think the good thing about Joe Hart is that, you know, he's a number one now, but we could be doing with that in the defence as well, because you don't want to chop and change every week. But no, I was quite impressed with Carter Vickers. I think he's obviously had a good upbringing at, like, Spurs. I've seen a bit of him last year for Bournemouth and I thought he was very good. And hopefully as he gets to speed, he'll just keep getting better and we can get a stable back five, and, you know, then you can kind of chop and change with the attacking players and the players that will probably be using the most energy going forward. But no, if that was a sign of things to come, I think you can be quite excited about Carter Vickers.
And somebody else that I thought played well was Adam Montgomery. He came on after Greg Taylor suffered a reoccurrence of that shoulder injury he suffered in Europe. And I think every time he's played this season, he's done well. He looks like a guy with a lot of confidence and he likes to get forward. And I know that game, the game of Thursday, we'll be talking about that a wee bit more in a couple of minutes against Betis, will be a hard game. But I wouldn't have any qualms about putting him in for the starting lineup. I mean, I'd rather he played there than we played a player out of position. And I think that he's showed already this season that he's more than capable of stepping in there and replacing Dale.
Yeah, I think you're right there. I think... I've said that an awful lot on Twitter. I've said it on our podcast. I think Montgomery's a great young player. He plays with a lot of heart. He plays with a lot of dig. And Andrew's obviously got a lot of trust in him as well. He's thrown him in. He came on in Michelin when the tie was in the balance. He came on both games. He came on in the first game against Alkmaar. He played a wee bit further forward. And then he got flung in the second game against Alkmaar. He's not let us down yet. He's very, very good. And I love the way that he's always first thought is just to get forward and take the ball with him. And we've actually not got enough players in the team like that. So I think his enthusiasm is really, really infectious. And I would have no problems if he lined up against Betis on Thursday night. I think you're right. I think we went with Juranovic at Ibrox, I think, probably because of his more kind of international experience. But in hindsight, maybe Montgomery would have been a better option. Not saying Juranovic had a bad game, but Montgomery was the one that came on against Alkmaar and established himself in the team. So I'd hope to see him if Taylor can't make it. And even if Taylor could make it, I think Montgomery's on the verge of making that left-back spot his own.
I would agree there. I mean, I know that I think Taylor, he's a bit unlucky, really. I think he's, I don't know if he's Celtic class. I mean, I think he's a decent enough player, but I don't think he'll ever be like a huge favourite, but I mean, the managers seem to like him. Maybe that's only because of your lack of players at left back, but I mean, Lennon picked him all the time and Angie's put them at first choice, and we didn't really look for a left back in the transfer window when the Aaron Hickey stuff, like, I think they were wanting too much money and we just left that. So, no, as you say, I mean, I think if Montgomery plays, it'll be a big test for him on Thursday, but I think he'd be able to handle it well enough, and if he has a poor game, that'll be a learning curve for him. Now, I think we should talk a wee bit about Jota. I thought he played well, especially in the first half. I thought he actually linked up quite well with Taylor at times. And I think, as like you said, Ange, then he really wanted to play the entire game, and it was a bit unfortunate he did. But no, I mean, I think he showed enough in glimpses. I think wingers are always going to be hit or miss. I mean, Abada's, like, I think he started well, but like he could have scored a lot more goals than he has already. But I mean, no, I thought Jota had done quite well. And at the now where we're sort of lacking attacking options with two strikers are injured, I think he'll be an important player in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, I think he's a good signing. I think he's got a good pedigree coming through Benfica. There's been an awful lot of great young players that have come through Benfica over the years. And I liked how his first thought yesterday was always to do like a kind of trick. He didn't just like get the ball and dribble. He was always looking to like drag it one side or the other and kind of bamboozle defenders. And I really liked him. I thought he played well. I think the end product will probably come with more games and the more he gets used to players making runs. And I agree with you. I thought he linked up well with Taylor. Taylor gets a bit of a bad rap, but I think his lack of confidence on the ball is probably going to probably define his Celtic career. But Jota signs were really encouraging, and I think he took a really good pass, the one that led to Abada at the back post. I think it was a great pass by Jota through to Rogic, and you'd like to think that will become more of a regular thing when he gets used to playing with his teammates. But plus he would have came here to play in Europe, so he'll be really looking forward to Thursday night. It's a really good chance for him, because in his mind, I'd imagine he'll be thinking there'll be a lot of people in Portugal watching Thursday night, so that'll be an added bit of motivation for him to go in and hopefully do a bit of damage for us on the European stage.
Yep, I think he'll be looking to impress in that game. And just before we talk about the European game, a quick word on two players that signed in the same day in the transfer window. Joe Hart, as you said, a brilliant save. When it was 1-0 to keep us ahead in the game, that would have made a big difference, I think, if we had to go and try and chase another goal against like, a Ross County team that were like packed in defence. And James McCarthy, I thought he did well when he came on. I was a bit surprised he was up so far in the box for his header that hit the bar that led to a jetty setting goal. But no, I mean, we already know about Joe Hart. I mean, he's done well already enough in his short time at Celtic to show that he's got to be a big player for us. And James McCarthy's not really featured that often because he's not been fit. But I think this week could be maybe his first big week at Celtic. We've got two games coming up. Maybe one of them looks easier in paper than the other, but it might not be because we've not got a good record recently at Livingston. We've not won an away game in the league since February, and we need to put that right. And we've a big, huge Celtic support at Livingston. I mean, I don't know. I think these two next games could be the making of James McCarthy in a Celtic shirt.
Yeah, they could be. And I think McCarthy, once he's in the team, I don't think he'll be at it again. I think once he gets that 4 or 5 games under his belt, I can't see who's going to take him out of the team. I think Ange will probably go with him, McGregor and Turnbull, and they'll let Turnbull go on with an attack and let McGregor maybe get further forward. Like you, I was surprised they got so at the back post, but it was a great header. He was really unlucky that it didn't go in. I think it was a great save onto the bar. And then I done what all good strikers do and got on the end of it. But McCarthy's an interesting one for me. I think it's always been a signing that I was never really keen on, purely because everybody else was so keen on it, and I thought it might go wrong. But I think we've got him at a good time. He's got his injury worries from like the last couple of years and stuff. But if you can get him fit, he's clearly a very good player, and he's a lot good. He's a lot better on the ball than he is off it, but I think he's off the ball what kind of gets highlighted a wee bit more. I've seen somebody had done a compilation of him when he signed for Celtic, and it was just him tackling folk when he was at Everton. But he's very good on the ball, and I thought yesterday he showed a wee bit of class when he came on. And as I say, I think once he's in the team, it'll be hard for him to get out of it, and it's up to it's up to him to get in the team, but I think he'll be fine. He'll be a mainstay in the squad. And Joe Hart, I've just finished on our show saying, I feel like a bit of a hypocrite because I remember me and you, in the good old days, we'd always make fun of Neil Lennon for saying things like this, but the best thing about Joe Hart is he looks as if he's completely engulfed in Everton Celtic or about, and he just looks like he's been here for years. And as I say, that continuity of now we know who the number one goalkeeper is this season is great, because last year you could have, I think it was a bit of a tombola, like, is it going to be Bain, is it going to be Barkas? And whatever one did start, it didn't fill you any confidence. So now you've got Joe Hart, you think he's starting, so that's good enough. And it was a great save yesterday. I actually thought it was a poor finish for the boy, but Joe Hart's still got to get across and make the save. And then 60 seconds later, we make it 2-0. So these are things that, you know, not just game-changing, but potentially season-changing. And these things can define where the trophies go. So to have a goalkeeper that's actually capable of making some saves, it's no half, gives you a sense of security or what goes on. Because the defence is still, I would think, fairly unsettled, and we're going to give up a lot of chances. So knowing that you've got a goalkeeper that's capable of actually saving things at a straight arm, it's quite encouraging.
Yep, as you say, he's been great, and we would never make fun of Joe Hart now because he's been great for us. But no, so let's take a look at our next game coming up, and it's going to be a tough one. It's our first Europa League group stage game. It's against Real Betis in Seville, back in Seville. I think for the first time since we got to the UEFA Cup final. And we're playing Real Betis. It's at 5:45 on Thursday night. Betis are actually not playing until tomorrow night, which is interesting. They're playing Granada tomorrow at 9 o'clock. So they only really have a lot of time between the games. And they haven't won any games so far this season. They've only played three league games. And they've drew the three of them. No, they drew the first two against Mallorca and Cadiz. They drew one each. And then they lost in the last game before the international break. They lost 1-0 at home to Real Madrid, which I suppose is a tough game, and I suppose that's a respectable result. But I mean, I don't think anybody's under any illusions about how difficult this game is going to be. And I mean, I don't know if we're going to be looking to, obviously we'll be trying to go out and win, but I think that may be a bridge too far. I mean, if we could get a draw, I think that would be a great result for us.
I think a draw would be a great result. I need to take the blame for the first two draws of Betis this season, because I backed them both of the games, and I probably should back them on Thursday night. But no, I think they're a very capable team. They've got a really good squad. I think the boy Fekir, who was tipped to go to Liverpool for years, ended up there quite oddly, but seems to have found a home there. And Pellegrini's a good manager as well. And I think over the last kind of, 20 odd years, I think the Spanish teams really take European football really seriously, and especially Europa League. So they'll be looking at Villarreal last year and thinking, well, it's a route into the Champions League, and hoping to catch, you know, like the English teams that don't really take it that seriously, hoping to catch them quite cold. So you would imagine, even though they've only got a couple of days rest, they're going to be right up for it at home. And it is a real tough fixture for us. But a draw, I think if you offered me a draw at the minute, I would take it. But I don't know. I think we'll miss Kyogo too much, but if Kyogo was there, I mean, I still think we're capable of scoring. If Kyogo was there, my mindset would be, do you know what? I think we're capable of scoring a couple of goals, and it's if we can keep them out of the back. Because the Alkmaar game, we kind of gifted them two goals, and then, not that they didn't trouble us, but it wasn't like an onslaught. Like, you know, it was kind of bluster rather than any substance. So if Kyogo was there, I would say to you, well, do you know what? I think we always carry a threat, and we might still do it without him. You know, I don't think he makes a team, but I think he's quite clearly he's your best player. But if he says it was going to be a 2-0 draw right now, I would take it. But if something tells me there's going to be goals in it,
I kind of see it being a 0-0. I mean, as you say, if Kyogo was fit, I'd be confident we could cause him problems, especially in the break. I mean, we saw with a goal that he scored away from home at Alkmaar in the second leg. I mean, that was a great goal on the break, and I think it might be just a bit too much for us. And this might sound a bit weird, but I think, you know, the Livingston game is arguably even bigger than the Betis game. That's this time next week, next Sunday at 3 o'clock. It's no on the television, oddly enough, but no, I think that's maybe a bigger game. I think that game will maybe show more about the current state of the Celtic team, because we need to win a game away from home in Scotland, like, as soon as possible. It's not good enough not to win any since February. I know there's been a couple of months break, but it's still not good enough for Celtic. And no, I think that game's probably even bigger. And we're no very good at Livingston in the last couple of years. We've struggled there. And they've got that plastic pitch. No, they've been crap this season. But no, to me, the Livingston game's even bigger. But we'll probably talk about that in the pod when that comes. But no, do you agree with that, that the Livingston game's maybe the more important one this week?
Oh, yeah, 100%, John. I think the Livingston game, the league is always most important. We always say that, but this year especially with the automatic Champions League spot up for grabs, I think, you know, if you say to me better, so take three off you, but you'll sneak a 1-0 away to Livingston, I would take that as well, because we need, as you say, we need to address this away form that we've got. We've lost both away games this season, tough, like Rangers and Hearts are probably the two of the more tougher away fixtures that we're going to get, but it's been, the Hearts game was like a game Celtic lose, you know what I mean? Like when Celtic a week, when we've got bad teams, we go to Tynecastle and lose games like that. And then the defeat the other week, which I thought was a 50-50 game settled by a set piece with, that the game is kind of dour with very low quality. So we need to really set about a team away from home and just show that we can win at home, because as much as we're turning Celtic Park into a bit of a fortress, away from home is suspect. And until, like as you say, there'll be a lot of Celtic fans at Livingston next week, and until we show that we can go and win away from home, it will always be something that will be a doubt cast over this team. So, no, we definitely need to go away, and Livingston's, I don't think there's much of a question, John, on what's more important. I think most sensible fans would rather beat Livingston.
Yep, I would agree with that. The Livingston game is a big one, and we'll probably do a pod after that. Some either Steve or somebody will be back. So, Bruce, thanks very much for being on the pod this week. It was good to talk to you, and plug the Four Tims podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. It's a pleasure to be here, as somebody once said. So I'm usually on Four Tims in a podcast. You can find us on Apple Podcasts and other, wherever you get your podcasts. We're also on YouTube at Four Tims Podcast. And we're just like gig pod, really. Just come on and talk a lot of rubbish about Celtic for a period of time after the games and that. So if you like gig pod, you'll probably like us.
And leave us the usual good reviews, the 5-star ratings on the usual places. You know where to find us. We'll probably be back after the Betis game and after the Livingston game. Two big games this week. Let's hope for two good performances and results for Celtic. And we'll speak to you all soon. Hail, hail.
Podcast Network.